Welcome, everybody, to Horror Movie Yearbook. I am your host, Tim Long, and I am joined by...
Willie Gibbs. Welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook, peeps.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Welcome, fam.
Welcome, fam. Yes.
That was a big saying in 2016, yeah. Fam.
16, nice, right? Little lingo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. YOLO. It's,
yeah, that was like 2013. yeah, I know. We're about to get it popping up in here.
We're going like further back.
Yeah. Oh, we're traveling. Yeah. Yeah. We're unintentionally traveling back.
So how's it going, Willie? Doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Yeah, I'm doing all right. I am having a pretty good week. Had a couple days off of work this week. Burning off those vacation days.
Yeah.
So it feels good. You know, yeah. Nice short weeks for the couple.
Did you hang in on your vacation days? Were they on fleek?
Yeah, they were totally on fleek.
Did you hang out with your squad?
You know I did. Yeah. Yeah. Squad goals, baby.
Yeah, you ain't basic.
Oh.
Like, I Googled it, and that was the first thing that came up on MTV.com was those three words.
Yeah, what a bummer. Yeah.
I called it lingo, too, which I don't think it's been used.
No, we're really hip. No, yeah, so things are going good. Pretty excited to see what the Christmas haul brings me.
Yeah.
Excited to see some people. Brother's flying into town. It'll be very nice to see him.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, post-Christmas, but cool. In between Christmas and New Year's, I'll be seeing him. So that'll be nice.
Cool.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's good.
Watch any Christmas movies?
Yeah, lots of, like, Lifetime / Hallmark / like, ABC Family.
Yeah.
Like, lots of Dean Cain in my house right now,
yeah.
Which I'm not a huge fan of. I mean, honestly, some of them are kind of funny. Mm-hmm. Like, they're really bad. If you Mystery Science Theater them, they can be a lot of fun. But I mean, I'm getting through it. I want to watch Die Hard shortly here.
Yeah,
so.
I do. On Christmas Eve, my brother and I and my dad and my mom, she usually, taps out for Die Hard because Die Hard's usually the last one we do. It usually ends up being my brother and I.
Yeah.
But we do Scrooged and then my dad does, White Christmas.
Okay.
And then we'll throw in some like Rudolph and stuff like that.
Some of the classics.
Yeah, I've been watching some Hallmark movies as well.
Have you? Okay. Cool.
I watched one called The 12 Dates of Christmas.
Yeah, I saw that one.
With Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Yeah.
Amy Smart.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It was pretty good. She's a really bad person for most of it.
Yeah, they always are.
Yeah.
They're always really selfish and like super obsessed with everything that's going on with them.
Yeah.
And they usually get taught like a lesson, but they don't really seem to learn that much anyway.
No, because there's really no lesson to be taught. Like, Mark Paul Gosselaar in the movie is like a perfect human being.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with
date
him.
Date him.
Date the guy.
What are we
You're
doing?
You're single.
Yeah.
You're both looking for love. Yes. I didn't see any. So, I mean, I liked it, though.
Yeah.
It was one of the better ones. Speaking of Christmas, not really. we've got some, we're going to plug some stuff right now. Westworld FM. Westworld just wrapped.
Yeah, season one's over.
Did you watch it?
No.
Me neither. I think they were all robots.
Cool.
That was what happened.
Is that the big twist?
they were all robots. But hey, if you want to find out what happened, listen to Westworld FM.
They just
put up their season one wrap up.
Absolutely.
They're going to talk about season two.
They're good pals of ours.
Yes.
So please show them some love.
Yes. Second thing, this is pretty exciting, the Midwest Game Nerds podcast. They just released an episode a couple days ago, the 50 games we think all gamers should play.
It's absolutely delightful.
Yeah.
Yeah, even if you're not, like, if you haven't played video games in years, they cover a lot of cool stuff, like older stuff, too.
Do they?
Yeah. There were some things that I was like, man, I never played that. Like, it makes me want to go back and, like, try some of the stuff that I never...
What Nintendo games do they have on there?
Not a ton of NES. Most of their early stuff was Genesis stuff.
Okay.
Like, it was, like, that generation.
Right.
But lots of stuff like Shining Force. And I was like, oh, I never actually played Shining Force. I should probably do that. You know, like, little things like that.
I'm looking at the tags right now.
They did not include the Friday the 13th NES game or the Nightmare on Elm Street NES game.
They got all the Watch Dogs on here, though.
Or the Halloween or Texas Chainsaw Massacre games for Atari 2600.
Did you watch the demo? There's a 17-minute demo.
It looks
Did you watch
so
it?
Sweet.
Oh, my God.
It looks awesome, right?
I didn't watch it.
Dude.
Should we just spend the next 17 minutes watching it out of the podcast
Dude,
and reacting?
Like, I was in from the word go with this Friday. They're doing a Friday the 13th video game, for those of you who might not know. And it was a Kickstarter project, and this gaming company, Gun Media, they're kind of a smaller group. But they got a lot of involvement from... you know, series kind of icons. You know, they've got Tom Savini involved, they've got Kane Hodder involved, Harry Manfredini, who did the score, and then Sean Cunningham. And it's a very exciting project, but I mean, there's always that part of me when I see like a Kickstarter, you know what I mean? A Kickstarter project, like, okay,
Right.
Is it really going to be good? Because I've seen quite a few of those not come out, and people were pretty underwhelmed. And then you got to worry about the idea of a licensed video game, because those don't have the best track records. Please see the LJN version of Friday the 13th for NES. One of the most infuriating games ever. But this looks pretty darn good. But I'm officially sold after watching the 17 minutes of people actually playing it.
Yeah.
And like trying to communicate to survive with each other. We're going to watch some of this before I leave so you can see it.
Yeah, I mean, I keep seeing it while I'm at work.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, I'll catch that later when I get home. And then I forget to do it. So
we're going to be playing some of this.
Got it up on my computer right now. So we'll watch it.
We'll give it a view. Yeah.
Yeah. And we will work something out at some point to review this game somewhere.
I did talk with John Morrell of the Game Nerds, and he would like to do some sort of crossover episode.
Good.
When that comes out, so we can talk about that. Mm-hmm. So we'll make something happen. Whether it'll probably be in both feeds at that point, I would think. We'll do it in their feed and our feed. So
yeah, it's like a crossover.
Yeah,
like
comic. That's all. Hey, that's all the rage in Hollywood right now.
Right.
It's a shared podcasting universe we're developing here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
With Westworld, there will be robots in it.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Willie, you got some feedback?
I do, yeah. So just a couple things off the top here. We did get a couple responses. We put up a poll in terms of what we wanted our third movie to be. I realized that my post was not, and I apologize for this to everybody involved, was not very informative in terms of what movies we had actually already picked. So sorry about that. Tim fixed that. Thank you, Tim. But we did get a couple responses that I wanted to talk about. Alex, please stop requesting Yoga Hosers. You're making me really mad.
We're gonna discuss it for... Or I'm going to discuss it for like 60 seconds today.
Yeah,
and that will be all you get, Alex.
You're going to get a tidbit of Yoga Hosers, my friend, and that's all you deserve, Alex. And then Danny came back around again and suggested fear.instagram.com, which I believe must be a sequel that I'm not aware of. So.
Yeah, it might be one of those like straight to video.
Right.
Fear.com.
So that's.
I had an
good
idea for a fear.com sequel.
Oh boy!
Because of we'll talk about it a little later, but fake news is all the rage.
That's true.
On the internet, so I had a concept in my mind of like Ooh. Like a different reality created by all this fake news source, and someone gets trapped in it. It's called fear.com too.
Oh, fear.net. I like that. Fear.sexy. Anyway, so we did receive a couple of emails from our pal Jason. I do want to mention we did receive some feedback from Jason earlier. We didn't get a chance to address it, but yeah. I'll be mentioning it now. He had sent us some suggestions in terms of years/movies. Just want to go through some of the years he suggested. 1980 is one that he threw out there, and he threw out a few good movies: Friday the 13th, The Shining, and Cannibal Holocaust. All great choices.
Yeah.
And I would hazard a guess and say that, well, I guarantee that at some point we're going to get to 1980.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't doubt that at least one or two of those will be on there. So
yeah. Yeah, the only one I might hesitate on is Friday the 13th because we have an entire Fight the Franchise.
Right, yeah. I'm almost hesitant to do that. You know what I mean? I love that franchise, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
But those other two, definitely.
For sure. And then Jason's a big 2000s fan, which is kind of cool, actually. He wanted us to talk about 04, 08, 11, and 12 at some point. So he had a few, few select years from that time period. And some of the suggestions, Shaun of the Dead, definitely worthy of consideration. Saw, for sure. The Strangers, the Cloverfield, I like that choice. Attack the Block, The Innkeepers.
Ooh, Attack the Block.
Yep, that's a cool choice. You're Next. We both love You're Next. Mm-hmm. That will probably get talked about at some point. Couple fun ones in 2012 I want to mention. Frank and Weenie, Paranorman.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
Was Monster House around that same time?
Yeah, it was close. So I hadn't considered kind of those like children's horror films, but
we throw toss one of those in
I think it's worthy of it.
Yeah.
And then Cabin in the Woods, which we're both huge fans of as well. So yeah. I would expect we would talk about that at some point too. But anyway, thank you so much, Jason. Sorry we didn't get around to that before, and glad we did this time. He did send us a secondary email as well. This is kind of in response to our last episode, which was, of course, the class of 1994.
Okay.
So, Jason said he's just getting around to watching In the Mouth of Madness. Movie reminds him so much of the albeit pretty dumb Stephen King classic Needful Things with the man in black and the old bad guy from Minority Report. I know their names. I'm just spoiling stuff for no reason. Needful Things, I feel like, if done right, could be a pretty amazing TV miniseries. I've seen Needful Things many
Who's
moons ago.
Who's in Needful Things?
Ed Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Is in Needful Things.
Okay.
And that's all I remember in terms of who's in it. But I remember thinking it was a cool idea.
Max Van Sydow.
Yes.
So I believe this is Bonnie Bedelia from Die Hard.
There we go. Speaking of Die Hard. I remember thinking it was kind of an interesting story, but I didn't get into the actual movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was kind of a lot of the Stephen King adaptations a lot of the ones from that period are very milquetoast. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they're like the leading men generally, and Ed Harris is by no means like vanilla, but a lot of the leading men in those King movies are like kind of like boring, bland, like
right.
I don't know. They're ciphers for the audience more mm-hmm. than their actual characters and stuff. And part of that's in the book, part of that's they cast these kind of generic kind of people. I don't know. I get very bored with a lot of that stuff.
This is a King book I've read and I have seen I think I've seen the movie. I don't remember it much though.
Okay.
It's been a while. But this was directed by Frazier Clark Heston, the son of Charlton Heston.
Oh wow. Yep. Interesting.
Also directed Alaska. I don't know if you remember that. It was
an adventure film of some sort.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. It also stars J.T. Walsh, and J.T. Walsh is the King.
Interesting.
Star of Breakdown, which is awesome.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Wow. So okay, cool.
Wow. Okay. Anyways.
How do we get there?
Yeah. Jason says, don't know if you mentioned Needful Things in this episode or not, because I'm sending this before listening. We did not, but we did this time. Just had the rest of In the Mouth of Madness and Cemetery Man to watch. Thanks for these picks. Hadn't seen any of the three in this episode and really enjoying them. That's awesome.
Cool.
That's awesome, Jason. Glad to hear it. I think it's cool that you're seeing what you're like going and watching these before you listen to us. I think that's a very cool way to do it. So glad we could hopefully turn you on to a few cool movies. And don't hesitate to send us feedback in the future. That's all I got, feedback-wise. So we can
Coolio.
Move along.
You ready?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no time machine.
There's no time machine.
No. It's undergoing repairs.
Yeah. So yeah. We're just going to not happen anything.
We're just going to hang out at the table. We're just going to sit at this table we're sitting
at. We're not
at.
Going anywhere.
No.
We're staying right here. 2016 needs us.
It does. It needs us to pull it back from the brink of darkness.
Yeah, so we're wrapping up 2016 here. Most people seem to agree this has been a rough year. Just in general. But we don't want to get into that. We don't want to get into why. They're probably right. Anybody who
says
that.
I think it has. I think we've had.
I don't think this has been a banner year for humanity.
No, I think there's been a lot of political and social strife and turmoil in the world, especially in the U.S. That's been tough. It's been a very divisive year mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. I think that we've had a lot of really, really, I think, hard-hitting deaths in music and movies and so on and so forth. And that's always sad to have those big losses, you know.
Yep.
And I don't think like when I talk to a lot of people I know, it just hasn't been a great year for them, just personally.
Right.
It's been kind of a meh year, you know.
I had a good year.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. So no, it's good.
So really, I don't care about anybody else.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I got mine.
Yep. You got yours. So.
You have a good year?
It was all right.
Good.
Yeah. No. And
well, you got married last year. 2015,
I did. Yes, I did.
So
yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. So no, it was I have some things I'll talk about in terms of things that happened this year that were nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you asked me to kind of compile a list of positive things in 2016, I'll be honest, I had a very hard time finding things in the news that happened that were positive, so I went with things that happened to me.
Personal stuff?
Personal.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should I just go right off the top here?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. I saw John Carpenter live in concert.
I saw him with you.
In 2016.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and if you want to put this in humanity, John Carpenter toured this year.
He did?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
that's
good.
Big deal.
Yep.
And it was everything. It was actually more than what I expected.
It was awesome.
It was wonderful. One of the greatest concerts I've ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
I got to hang out with a cousin who I have not spent any time with in like 24 years.
Yeah.
That was awesome. We caught up. We have a lot more in common than you'd expect.
Good.
We get along super well.
Good.
Like, it was really nice.
Good.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. Reconnecting. That's always a
plus. Was great. Yeah, no, we just kind of chatted it up and stuff, and I'm probably going to be going out to Jersey to go visit him at some point. It was very nice. Took an awesome trip to, a couple of awesome trips. Niagara Falls, went there for the first time, never been there before. Delightful place. Mm-hmm. Would definitely suggest it. Would definitely suggest the various wax museums you can go to.
Wax museums are always...
They're a lot of fun.
Awesome, because I went to one this year, too.
Yeah. Where'd you go? Which one did you go to?
I went to... Well, it was Ripley's. It was... Oh, gosh, I can't remember the name.
Ours was a Ripley's, too.
Something
Tussauds,
but it wasn't Madame Tussauds. It was, like, Frank Tussauds.
It's like her second cousin or something.
It was so good. I posted pictures on Facebook. Maybe I'll post a couple somewhere else.
They usually have a horror or macabre section.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite part.
And they're usually the least scary.
Yeah.
Of some of the wax figures. There was one of like Brad Pitt that I was like,
freaked out.
Like, his face is falling off.
Yeah. Looks like a monster. So I did that and I took a nice trip to Mackinac Island, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, very nice.
Up
by my neck of the woods.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I got a promotion at work this year. Nice. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, that was good.
You gotta like that. I was able to cross 3 films off my top 10 in theaters list. So 3 more of my top 10 movies of all time I was able to see in theaters this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy about that. It was Halloween, Dawn of the Dead, both the originals, and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Okay.
So that's 3 more down. I think I'm at a total of 5 that I've seen now of my 10.
Awesome.
So very exciting stuff. And then we started this show.
Right.
Right? And yeah. I feel good about that. This has been a wonderful experience so far. So,
good.
Honestly, not a bad year.
Yeah. So.
Not a bad year for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did all right for myself. Got a puppy.
Yeah.
I moved in with my girlfriend. She has it. I got a week left, but she hasn't kicked me out yet.
That's pretty sweet.
Right?
So, yeah.
Still have a roof over my head.
That's not too shabby.
Yeah, it was a good year.
Yeah.
So hopefully our personal well-being there this year lifts your spirits if you had a bad one.
I hope so.
But there were some other good things that happened.
Sure. What else happened, Tim?
In the world. Giant pandas are no longer on the endangered species list.
What a nice thing.
I was looking up good news in 2016. This popped up first.
That's very nice.
They're still vulnerable, but... There are now 2,060 giant pandas in the wild.
That's awesome.
Which is a step up. So,
go get them, pandas.
Some other good things that happened. Leo DiCaprio finally won his Oscar.
He did, yeah.
I don't care at all.
No.
But I'm glad I don't have to hear about him not winning an Oscar anymore.
Yeah, I find it amazing that this many people felt bad for Leonardo DiCaprio for anything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And he won it for one of his worst movies. In a while.
Yeah.
He should have won it. If he's going to win it, he should have won it for Wolf of Wall Street or Django.
Or The Departed.
Or The Departed.
Or any number of films.
But he won
made.
It for the movie where...
He crawls around and groans.
He crawls around and groans at a bear.
And he did good at it. Like,
yeah,
he was good
fine.
At crawling
yeah.
around and groaning.
Yeah.
It was believable groaning.
And he worked really hard for the Oscar, campaigning for the Oscar, too. He was look at all this hardship that I did.
Yeah. On my 100... Whatever. I'm not going to get into it.
The election finally ended.
Yes,
this thing has been going on for 8 years, I'm pretty sure. So
yep.
It's over. So
yep.
That was a positive. Dave Chappelle was back on TV. That was nice.
Yeah,
nice
and
he
was back on TV, he was on SNL, and he was doing some of his Chappelle Show stuff, which is kind of cool.
His skits, it was a good episode. Speaking of SNL, David Pumpkins was this year, so it was good.
Yeah, David Pumpkins was great. I think the nice thing, too, is that people are acknowledging how great David Pumpkins was.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it's not the last time we see David Pumpkins.
The Summer Olympics happened, a celebration of sport and humanity around the world. And
I'm trying so hard not to talk right now.
Ryan Lochte got exposed for being a moron, which is what I've always wanted.
Yeah.
He's really stupid.
Yeah, he's bad.
He's stupid. And he got exposed. There were no consequences, really, because he just showed up a month later on Dancing with the Stars. And remember that guy ran out of the crowd, too.
And no.
I can't remember. He was like a protester. He's protesting Ryan Lochte.
Oh, just as a person. Wow.
So, and he just ran out and he protested. And I thought that was funny, too. But
really funny.
I've never liked Ryan Lochte.
He seems like a jerk.
Yeah. The new Metallica album was pretty good.
Okay.
I've liked their last two now because I like Death Magnetic quite a bit.
There you go.
It was a nice step up after St. Anger, which is... I know one person who listens to this show who... defends St. Anger, and I mean good for him. I mean he's got a very good defense of it, but it sounds like it was recorded in a tin can and it's straight up garbage. We're gonna get an angry letter soon. The OJ show happened.
Yes,
OJ's back.
Yeah.
our favorite here at the podcast. Yeah. Nice to see him. David Schwimmer was all over it. John Travolta was looking weird. All sorts of great things happened there. The Crying Jordan meme happened. Are you aware of the Crying Jordan meme?
Crying Jordan.
It's where... Crying Jordan, it's a picture of Michael Jordan. He's very sweaty. He looks like he's crying.
Yes.
And so anytime like a sport, like anything, something bad happens, someone will put Michael Jordan's like crying face over.
And given the events of this year, they were using that a lot.
There was quite a few of them. And here's the best thing, and it's been pointed out many times, but here's the best thing about Crying Jordan is you can't, if you're on the internet, you can't be like, hey, this is stupid to cut it out, because someone will take your avatar and just put a Crying Jordan face on top of it. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So it's really the perfect meme. The Cubs won the World Series in the best sporting bet I think I've ever watched.
That's pretty amazing.
It was awesome. McDonald's started serving breakfast all day.
All right. Yep. I'm all for it.
See, now we're talking.
Let's get that McGriddle.
We're cheering people up right now.
Yep.
This was actually kind of nice. Remember a couple years ago, the Ice Bucket Challenge?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I did one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in 2016, it paid off. Like, the ALS Association has credited the money and awareness-raising stunt for the breakthrough discovery of a gene believed to be among the most common contributors to the disease.
You're kidding me. That's
so
awesome.
So, it's all, yeah. So,
all those people that were complaining, like, oh, everybody's doing this. It's
everybody's doing it, yeah.
But it seemed to do something.
And here's the thing. Social media is... some of the negative aspects of it have come to light this year. But there's some positive to it.
That's
well.
Awesome. No, yeah. That's great. I'm honestly really happy to hear that.
So... So we'll end it there.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I feel better.
So yeah.
Good job,
go.
Tim.
I Hopefully everything's all right. All right. But we're going to talk about some movies.
Sure.
And we are going to talk about, I think, both of our, it's definitely both of our favorite horror movie. It's our favorite horror movie of the year for both of us.
Okay.
It might be my favorite movie overall.
It might be mine too. I'd have to, I've been so focused on horror movies lately, obviously with the show, that I'd have to really take a look at all the movies this year and see.
It's a toss up right now in my head, and I kind of want to watch it again, is this and The Nice Guys.
I didn't finish The Nice Guys.
Oh, did you not go see it with us?
No,
I thought you did for some reason. So anyway.
I need to finish it.
Enough teasing. We are going to talk about Green Room. Because it's our favorite horror movie of the year.
Yes.
And we want to discuss it. Yes. And it has become relevant. So here's the here's the summary of Green Room. Members of a punk rock band and a tough young woman battle murderous white supremacists at a remote Oregon roadhouse.
Sounds about right.
Succinct, just like the movie. Pretty much sums it up there. Willie, this is also your favorite horror movie of the year?
Oh, for sure. Without a doubt. I think, honestly, I liked a lot of stuff this year, but this one somehow managed to win it by a mile for me. It's so good, Tim. Yeah. Jeremy Saulnier, who's the director, I had seen his previous film, which was Blue Ruin. And I'd heard a lot of buzz for it as being kind of like a cool, like, indie, like, revenge flick. You know, like, I checked it out and I was like, oh, man, this guy. Like, give this guy a little more money and he's going to blow us away. And he sure did. Because then he came out with The Green Room, which is the nastiest, most uncompromising, one of the most brutal films I've ever seen. I mean, if Green Room feels real,
yeah,
like it feels like real. Like it feel, I don't think I can think of an experience in the theater where I sat there and I was that, like, I not only was I on the edge of my seat, I was like physically like I felt ill.
Yeah, we went to see this together.
Yeah,
and I remember you don't quite react, like, physically at horror or at movies sometimes when I'm around you. But, like, yeah, I remember looking at you, like, reacting to certain things in the movie.
it was hard for me.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is my big fear as a human being is all those other people, for sure.
Yes.
And is my big fear is people that believe in something so wholeheartedly, like, that truly their way of life involves hating other people.
Right.
That terrifies me. And those are the people that I'm like, that I like, if I'm not scared of like a serial killer, like I'm not scared that like that's gonna be my fate, but I believe that maybe I'm in the wrong bar at the wrong time. I hate to say it, but it could happen. And that's what happens to these kids in this punk band, is they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Do they make some decisions to put themselves there? Absolutely.
That's actually one of my favorite parts of the movie, is they make a lot of bad decisions because they're kind of stupid.
They're not bright.
They're kids.
And they just want to play a live show and make a little money.
They make believably dumb decisions.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. And really, it all winds up being, what's funny is the thing that gets most of them killed, winds up getting most of them killed, is as simple as we've all done it before. They left their cell phone charger in the other room.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Who has not done that?
Yeah. And the other
Who would
is,
not make that mistake?
The other thing is, like, they refuse to have, because they're a punk band, and then they want to stay pure and, like, edgy, they refuse to have, like, any sort of, like, social media presence either.
Yeah, they can't help themselves.
So there's no, like, communication with any of their fans or outside world.
It's a believable, like, it's a believable scenario to mm-hmm. me. I did not have to, you know, suspend my disbelief at all with this movie. And here's the thing that really, really got me, and the reason why you saw me reacting physically the way I was. This movie plays with your expectations, I think, of a Siege film. Because I feel like you always have the archetypes in a Siege film to a certain extent. You've got your leader. You've got your guy who's going to take charge of the situation. He's going to be one of the rally the troops. You know what I mean? And he's usually the guy who's going to make it to the end or go out in a blaze of glory, right?
Right.
You got your female lead always. Then you've got your, like, tough guy brawler who, like, just smokes people left. And there's always, like, that guy, that badass in the group. And the badass in this group is the drummer of the punk band. Because he's doing, like, UFC moves to these guys. And you're like, oh, shit. Like, this guy's got... We're good. He's got this. And then, like, just as soon as you start to go, yeah, he's going to make this happen for him. He's going to escape and get help. He's done. Mm-hmm. That's it. He's done. We should probably put a spoiler warning up front for these.
Yeah, we're going to spoil these movies.
Yeah.
And I know they're newer movies. We'll talk a little bit, like, fast about some movies later on. But The Green Room, Invitation, and Conjuring 2.
Yes.
We're going to spoil.
Yep. And maybe I'll put a warning in the post, too. But yeah, no, he's gone. He's dead. Like, he's the one who I believe could get them out of there. And then, like, and he doesn't, it's not like some dramatic moment where he has this, like, it's not a Hollywood death. Where, like, he's got this, like, speech he gives before he dies. Or he's got some sort of moment where he's it's in slow motion. He's fighting back, you know, struggling to survive or whatever. No, he jumps out a window. He's instantly, like, stabbed. And then stab repeatedly. Like, it's brutal.
Yeah, it's so... Oh,
and then a
God.
Dog eats, like, four of these people, like, in this movie. Like,
God, that dog, yeah.
Elias Shawkat gets eaten by a dog in this movie, and it's really mean. Like, it's really hard to watch. But the entire time, I was so, I don't know, I was so, like, engrossed in what was going on. I was so enthralled. I, like, had to see these kids, like, at least one of these guys get out of here. But then Patrick Stewart's amazing in it too.
Oh, he's so good.
I could talk about him. I could gush about him for a while too. Yeah. But I don't know, Tim. You talk about Green Room for a little.
No, I agree with pretty much everything you said. There are two very similar horror movies released this year: this and Don't Breathe. And
yes.
I liked Don't Breathe, but this is the stronger of the two, and I think the more tense of the two. What's weird is. I came out of the movie, and I kind of sat there going like, oh, I mean, when did this movie take place? Even though they had like, cell phones and blah blah blah, and I kind of sat there and I was like, when did this movie take place? Because I didn't like, are skinheads still a thing? And guess what? Guess what? It turns out they are. And even like, I found a interview. Speaking of 2016, I found an interview with the director on Gawker.
Oh yeah, not a good year for Gawker.
Not a good year for Gawker. Probably deserved bad year, but he's basically said it's a good interview too, by the way. So if you type in Gawker and Jeremy Sonnen, and you'll find it. But he's like, his producer came out of an early cut of the movie, and he's like me. He's like, when is this take? Are these still a thing? Like, is
yeah,
this still happening?
Thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and it's it's funny because then in Oregon this year, there was that siege situation. And there's a siege situation there. You had the shootings in South Carolina.
Florida.
He talks about that. And he's like, yeah, I did not expect this to become so relevant. And unfortunately, it has.
Yeah.
And what I think is interesting about this movie is a lot of things. But it kind of asks the question, like, what do these kids do, and what do people who aren't racist, like, what do you do to defeat this kind of thinking? And I think it arrives at an answer towards the end when they, because they're asked to name their desert island bands, and they finally, a lot of them finally kind of admit, or a couple of them finally admit, like, no, these are...
One of them says Prince.
One of them says Prince.
Yeah. Which is not punk.
No, not... They admit that all these punk bands... So the movie's kind of saying, like, maybe nobody's born a white supremacist that I'm aware of.
No.
There are people that have...
Maybe they're born into the world of that.
Or they have the potential to be.
Sure.
They have it ingrained, maybe, in their DNA to be susceptible to that kind of thinking. Because you watch a lot of these... I've watched some documentaries and a lot of movies about white supremacists and skinheads, and a lot of it's just really, really, it's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people, they're sad people, and a lot of them are, the reason they cling to these kind of groups is because they're looking to fit in with people who will accept them.
I think that would be, honestly, I think that's the majority of, of that, I think.
And you're right, and it's embarrassing, and it's sad. And you just kind of pity them, for the most part.
It's interesting because it's the same mentality, I think, that would lead an inner-city kid to join a gang.
Yeah.
It's that feeling of belonging and a safety net and a support system that maybe they're not getting somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's just with white supremacists, it's based around hate of a specific... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's an extra layer of icky.
Yeah.
You know? So...
You what I mean by pity... You should pity them, but the unfortunate thing is they seem to be relevant. So you should not pity them. You should... react to them, and this movie is kind of saying, well, maybe deep down inside, everybody should recognize their true self, and when things get stripped away, that's when you come to grips with who you are, because a lot of times when tensions get high, people react in very outlandish and
extreme
angry,
ways,
and that's what kind of happens in this movie, and people don't think.
Yeah, nobody really makes any calculated decisions in this, except for maybe Patrick Stewart, who's like got the shit on lock.
Yeah.
But by that point,
right,
because of everybody else, it's become a problem. You know, I mean, it's gotten out of his hands even. So, yeah.
Yep. And I think, a lot of it, it's really, the interview too is really interesting. So yeah, check it out. But I mean, he talks about how, because I do know a lot of skinheads go to like punk music, hardcore music shows.
Sure.
And it's funny because a lot of the punk music I've ever listened to, does not
endorse
cater
that.
To their ideas. So
I think it's more of an aggression thing.
Me too.
Yeah.
So but there are more than likely bands that I have not listened to.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely.
They kind of cater to that. So
absolutely.
So he talks a little bit about that. It's 90 minutes. It's really tense.
Mm-hmm.
The characters all make decisions that fit their characters. It's just really, really well done.
Yeah, if you want to see, and this is by no means a slasher movie, but if you want to see what a slasher movie would look like with characters that are actually three-dimensional that you care about, this is it, the closest you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. I mean, this is what it would be like. It's an incredible film, but it's rough.
Yeah, you and I watched this within a month or two of... Hateful Eight, I believe, because we went and saw Hateful
Also
Eight.
Rough.
And these were like two of the goriest movies I think I'd
they're
seen
grim.
In a while. And they are. Green Room is actually more hopeful than Hateful Eight is just.
Yes, no, Hateful Eight
is just completely.
Hateful Eight's funny. That's the only thing about Hateful Eight. Hateful Eight is so ridiculous it gets funny because it's got that Tarantino goofiness about it.
Yep.
This one doesn't have any of that, but at least this movie at least ends with a sense
of
hope.
There is some catharsis at the end, and like you are by the end of
the movie. The best headshot ever.
Patrick Stewart. We had to Google him afterwards to make sure he's actually alive.
Yeah, because the bullet he takes to the head in this movie, it looks like they actually killed Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
I wasn't 100% sure they didn't.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the first things you said to me afterwards is you're like, dude, we need to check on Patrick Stewart. Like,
great performances as well.
Yeah,
I want to touch on those. Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, it's. I watched this again. Like I rewatched.
Yep.
Sad man.
It really is.
Yeah, it was actually kind of rough to watch it.
Yeah, I can imagine it being a little uncomfortable. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. But he's great in it. Callum Turner, the green haired kid.
Mm-hmm.
I like Imogen Poots was in some good stuff this year.
She grows on me, man.
Yeah, I liked her in this. Elia Shawkat is always pretty good.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, all the kids are great. All the skinheads are great.
Oh, I say Imogen Poots was in other good stuff because she was in Popstar.
Yes,
I could not remember.
Yes, she was. And she was in the Fright Night remake with Anton Yelchin.
Oh, she enough. Was, wasn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah. Yeah. The guy who, I feel bad, but I don't remember his name. There's a guy who, he's the lead in Blue Ruin, and he's in this as well. He plays kind of the Patrick Stewart's like main lackey, yeah. I guess. And he's really good. He's really good in both. So
yeah, is it Eric Edelstein?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
He's Big Justin.
Big Justin. Yeah, Big Justin. I like Big Justin.
Oh, Big Justin. Yeah.
Yeah. So, great movie. Definitely worth a watch if you haven't seen it. Hopefully you have seen it, because we just spoiled the hell out of it. So,
yeah, definitely my favorite of the year.
Mine too.
Yeah. So you good? You good on Green Room?
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. All right. So yeah, Green Room, favorite movie of the year. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of our other favorite movies of the year. Will, you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about some of the stuff that maybe we didn't. I mean, we got a couple other movies we're going to go into in depth with a little bit here. I'd like to bring up some of the stuff that we maybe. Not, I don't want to say it didn't make the cut, but it. We didn't decide that it wasn't going to be one of our three kind of focus movies. Don't Breathe. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Killer concept for this movie.
It's the concept is so good.
It's super good.
Yeah.
The idea of this blind guy who's like way more dangerous than anybody else in the scenario, and the way you can play with that with the use of sound. And they use lack of sound in certain situations, trying to stay quiet and not breathe. You know, like that. There's a lot of cool stuff they're able to accomplish with that. The movie does get pretty crazy, you know. So
that's the thing, is the concept is so awesome that it's like too good. That at times there are times in it where the believability is so strained for me.
Yeah,
that I just kind of I rolled my eyes like one too many times during the movie.
Yeah,
but. Even during the parts where I rolled my eyes, I was still like, this is pretty sweet. Like, I can see why you did it. Like, because it's a cool idea to do.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I almost feel like it's two, like, movies that would be really good on their own. Like, like two tones that would work. But I don't know. It gets a little weird for me personally. I think it's worth a watch, though.
Yeah.
I think all the performances are solid. And like you said, there's some similarities, I think, to Green Room. You know what I mean? And some like young punks that are in over their heads kind of thing. So
Green Room kids are more likable.
Yes, they are. They are. Probably out of all the movies I'm going to name, the one that I'm really kind of bummed that didn't quite make the list of the three would be Hush.
I liked it quite a bit.
Mike Flanagan's Hush. Yeah. he's such an impressive director to me. And this movie kind of like squeaked out onto Netflix, like with little fanfare. It was just kind of there one day.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I heard about it from you and one of the podcasts I listened to.
Yeah,
and I was like, I'll check this out, you know? And I was like, whoa, like this is something else. Like it feels like a voice. You know what I mean? Like it feels like a unique director.
He had two movies, and I'm going to talk about one of them too, but he released two movies. Mike Flanagan did this year. And the other one's a blast. Ouija 2.
Which I did not see.
Yeah. Ouija 2 is so much better than Ouija 1 in, like, every way. And it kind of, I mean, it does what the original should have done, is a period piece about a Ouija board, which is what the original should have done.
Sure.
And it was the perfect October horror movie, because it's just, from start to finish, a lot of fun. Jump scares,
cool.
All sorts of haunted house stuff. And then it's cool to watch a lot of these newer indie directors get shots with the bigger budgets, because he lays on some really fun stylistic choices in the third act too. So if you're into that,
That's awesome.
I liked Ouija 2 a lot.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I do want to check it out. I haven't seen the first one. It sounds like you don't have to.
No, you don't.
I'll probably just skip it.
Yeah.
but yeah, Hush was really cool, and I can't wait to see moving forward. I think his next project is going to be is Gerald's Game, which is an adaptation of a Stephen King book. I'm very curious to see how he pulls that off. Neon Demon, Nicholas Winding Refn's most recent.
Oh, good. You're going to talk about that. Good.
Absolutely, I'm going to talk about it. This movie's Refn's out of his mind. He is. It's a gorgeous movie, and I don't think you could argue against the fact that all of his movies have been gorgeous so far. It's got some interesting performances. I like the basic idea works. It gets really out there. I mean, it gets really out there.
We talked about this movie together, and I liked it more than you did.
Okay.
But even I, Derek, there was one scene in particular where I just went, okay.
And the thing is, it's funny because I like I said, I like Refn so much. I like him more as a, he reminds me of a lot of like the Italian, like he reminds me a lot of Argento.
Yeah.
And this movie reminds me of like if Argento had a budget, you know what I mean? Like this is what the kind of thing he'd make. Mm-hmm. There might be more, more murders throughout, but he'd make something similar to this because it's mostly style to me. It's not a lot of substance. My thought process is Refn's like, I want to make a horror movie. Like decision one was, I want to make a horror movie. Mm-hmm. And decision two was, I want to make something that takes place in the world of like an LA modeling because I can make it look really pretty.
Right.
And then he went, what is that movie? And the problem for me with that is, like, we get it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anybody's arguing that the modeling industry is anything but a place where people are horrible to each other.
Right.
So, none of that lands for me. Okay.
And LA is silly.
Yeah. Like, let's do something. I don't know. To me, that was like where I was like, from a story aspect, I'm like, yeah, duh. Like, what are you saying, Refn? You know what I mean? So,
right.
But it was pretty. The Boy.
Oh, God. Thank you. Thank you. Because I was not going, this is your movie. Because
I love my boy Brahms.
Brahms is an icon.
I'll always love my boy Brahms. I will not apologize for enjoying this film.
Can you do your impression of Brahms real quick?
Kiss. Kiss. Kiss.
Yeah. Brahms is amazing. This, and I'm noticing a trend for 2016 horror movies where you think you're watching one movie, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah.
The Boy is no exception to that rule. So strap yourself in. It's totally worth watching.
I'll just mention talk about The Boy real quick. We're kind of flipped on Neon Demon and The Boy. I expected to like The Boy a lot more than I did.
Okay.
And I had fun with it, but it's so silly. Like,
it's
so silly.
It's
but Brahms
silly.
Is amazing. Because Brahms, he's so dapper.
He's there. He's so well dressed. So he takes such good care of himself.
Well behaved little man.
He's looking great. I love the little guy. I do. I'm a huge fan. Speaking of movies that get nuts in the last 10 minutes or so, 10 Cloverfield Lane
10
came
Cloverfield,
out.
Yeah.
I wasn't nuts about it. I understand why people do like it quite a bit. I'm interested to see where this franchise goes from here. I don't even know. I have a hard time calling it a franchise.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Shallows was pretty sweet.
Shallow's a lot of fun.
Nice little tense thriller. I'll never watch it again. I'm okay with that, but yeah. I had a ton of fun with it in the theater. Mm-hmm. It was like a good theater experience.
Directed by the gentleman who directed Orphan, one of our favorites.
Absolutely, yeah. Which I didn't realize until we started recording about Orphan. The last one I want to mention is The Wailing, which I just was able to squeeze in there. It's a Korean horror film, and it's on Netflix right now. You're going to see the runtime and you're going to go, whoa, because it is like 2 hours and 36 minutes long. Is it too long? Yeah, it's too long. But I'll say it's worth a watch. And if you're willing to kind of afterwards do the homework and the research on people's theories on what's going on in the movie, it makes the movie so much cooler. It's one of those movies, like, talking about it afterwards makes it a cooler experience.
Yeah.
So definitely check out The Wailing. Yeah.
Cool.
That's all I got.
Okay. I'll roll through mine. Then I do want to talk about some moments, too, some of my favorite moments, too, if you got some as mm-hmm. well. But I'll talk about some maybe more of my honorable mentions. Phantasm Ravager came out this year.
Yeah,
finally.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
Mm-mm.
I will be kind to it and say that it had some mixed reviews.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of fun with it, but I had no expectations.
Sure.
They don't have... I love the Phantasm sequels because they have more ambition than budget.
Sure.
And this still has that ambition and mm-hmm. still does not have that budget. But
they just go for it, man.
And I really do think... I think it's a nice capper to the series. It's Phantasm meets... kind of Bubba Hotep.
It's a nice farewell for Angus.
I think it's a nice farewell for the series.
Yeah.
And I liked it.
Cool.
But I will not... It's for fans only.
Okay.
And, like, forgiving fans.
We're only a few years out from a Phantasm remake at this point.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Realistically.
The original keeps... I mean, they just had the 4K restoration and... Yeah.
Yeah. Something's happening there.
Yeah. I don't think you need to remake it, but... I don't think you need to remake a lot of things, but...
I don't think you need to. I mean, I think you could, mm-hmm. and I think you could do something with it.
Right.
Whether or not they do, I don't know.
Yeah. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
I've got no issue with it, but it's a pretty damn good film, as it is.
Yeah.
Rob Zombie's 31.
Did not see this either.
It is Probably the most Rob Zombie movie Rob Zombie has ever made. The issue is, it's okay. I didn't hate it. I'm a fan of Rob Zombie's. I didn't hate it. It just kind of, it kind of felt like the album he put out this year too, which is like, hey, he knows his steps and he's hitting them. So I mean, it has its, there are fun moments.
It's bordering on lazy, like to the, like, you know what I mean? Where it's right. Like, it's where he's like, I know what people want from me, you know, like.
Visually, he is still, like, there are, and this is the thing with Zombie, is there are shots in his movies that are gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with this. There are beautiful shots in this movie, but
sure.
He's going back to the well here. And it's fine. Purge Election Year. Purge Election Year, I have now seen all of the Purge movies.
I've seen two or three.
Have you seen two of them?
Yeah.
They get better as they go. This okay. is the first one. The problem is, like, whenever the Purge actually hits in the first two, I, like, zone out. I'm like,
isn't like, that weird,
it's
though?
It's so like, weird because it's such a cool concept.
It's so bizarre because, yeah, the core idea of there being a Purge and how that works
mm-hmm.
is awesome.
Yeah.
And in the first movie, it was like, let's make it a home invasion movie, which
right.
was the worst choice. I remember just going, what?
Right.
Like, that's it? And it probably was a budgetary thing. And then the second one, they're like, okay, we're going to take it to the streets. It's like step up to the streets.
Yes.
Like, retain it to the streets.
And it's better.
And it's better. But for whatever reason, I still went, huh. You know what
yeah.
I mean? I just, I feel like it's that's a concept that deserves a huge budget and probably shouldn't be a, like a, you know what I mean? Like,
no,
it this, should be a bigger like action
is,
movie.
And this is the one that gets close. It's this one is pretty much a horror action movie.
That's what they should be, right?
Yes, and yeah. that's what they should be, and that's what this is. It works in some. It works in some political stuff. It's not entirely successful at that. It works
Good.
In some religious stuff too. That's also not entirely successful at. But I appreciate the effort, and I will say this. This also had one of my favorite moments of the year. And this is the first one. This is one of the movies that made me feel dirty after watching it,
oh,
so
wow.
I give it that. Because a lot of horror movies you watch, and movies like this, where it's kind of like horror action, they're mostly monsters in them.
Mm-hmm.
But like it hits you. This one does a great job because it hits you like these are people.
Yeah.
Like these are human beings, and I
yeah.
think they do a great job in this one for the first time.
Plus Frank Grillo, so.
Grillo's awesome.
He's always awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome. And so is Elizabeth Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's in this.
Yeah. I like her quite a bit.
She's good. And then there's a woman in it, too. She plays the character Lainey. She's a cool character.
Okay.
I liked her quite a bit. I made a top 10, so I'll list them off real quick.
Sure.
Number 10 is 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Just okay, nice.
Put it at 10.
Very nice.
I liked it a lot, even the third act.
Sure.
Number 9, I had it, like, I was going to pick a Mike Flanagan movie, and I went with Ouija 2, but I like both of them. It could be Ouija 2 Hush here. Number 8. Is a movie called Demon. It's a Polish movie that came
okay.
out.
Okay, yeah.
It may have been released over there in 2015, but it just came out on video on demand. I won't say much about it, but it's about a Dybbuk. The Dybbuk is it's a Jewish demon.
Oh, okay.
And I believe the Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Sam Raimi produced movie a couple
Possession.
Years. Possession was about yeah. Dybbuk.
Or The Possession.
The Possession. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. This is really good.
Cool. Do you want more Dybbuk movies?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Check it out. The Eyes of My Mother. I'm not going to say anything about this. It just came out. 2016 was an awesome, I think it was a great year for horror. And part of the reason is there's a little bit something for everybody
mm-hmm.
this year. You've got your artsy horror. You've got
Neon Demon.
You've got the mixture. Yeah. You've got, this falls into art house horror.
Okay.
I think this is my favorite of the art house horrors. But what's nice about 2016 is the last couple years have been, most of the indie stuff has been good. And a lot of the bigger budget stuff has just been kind of,
yeah.
This year the bigger budget stuff was good.
Sure.
So that was nice. Train to Busan.
I want to see it.
You should watch
this. Is it on Netflix?
It is not on Netflix. It's on VOD right now.
Okay.
This is one that you need to watch.
Yeah.
Because it's a blast.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a zombie. Zombies on a train, right?
Zombies on a train. It's a lot like World War Z.
Ooh. Sweet.
But it has some other stuff going. It's a mixture of, it's a Korean film. It's a mixture of kind of World War Z and stuff like The Host and Snowpiercer.
Man, Koreans are on point.
It's really good.
Crushing it, Korean.
So that was 6. My number 5, I just saw this, and this is on Netflix now, and I liked it a lot. It's called I Am Not a Serial Killer.
I just watched it.
Did you like it?
I forgot to mention that. Yeah, it's...
I liked it, too.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. It's crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping you liked it.
Another one that gets a little crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised by this one. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yeah, it was neat.
Don't want to ruin anything here, either.
I dug it, though.
Yeah. My number 4 is The Conjuring 2, which we'll talk about. My number 3 was The Invitation. My number 2 was The Witch, which we will not talk about today, but I loved. And I think it introduced another horror icon to put up there with Brahms.
Yeah.
Mr. Black Phillip.
Can somebody do a Photoshop of Brahms riding Black Phillip?
Brahms going to the betting zoo.
Yes.
Black
oh
Phillip.
My God. That'd be so good.
The Witch is one of those movies that comes out every once in a while, and it divides horror fans, because some people are like, it's not horror, it's a horror movie. And it divides horror fans, and I fall on the side of loving it. Like, I just,
sure.
it hits a sweet spot for me of, like, religious horror and kind of artsier stuff and witches.
Yeah.
Yeah, and talking demonic animals and just immersing you in the time period. The amount of, like, research and the strength of the writing that went into that, too, I think. The authenticity of the movie is so cool.
It's a gorgeous movie, too.
Yeah.
I wasn't the biggest fan, ultimately, but there are some standout moments, and it's worth watching, I think. I think anybody should check it out, for sure. Yeah. Even if you're not big on horror, I think you might be into it.
Yeah, I do, too.
Because it's kind of a cool, like, family drama, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my number one was Green Room. I forgot to talk about Yoga Hosers. Now, I watched Kevin Smith has released another horror movie this year. I guess it's a horror movie. This is more back to his comedy roots, I think. Willie, where do you fall on his horror output so far? I was a fan of his. It's been a while, but I loved his first five movies. And then I kind of fell off. And then he started releasing horror movies. I like Red State, I think, in my head, looking back on it. I think I like it. I just wish it was directed by somebody else. just because I don't think he's as strong.
The first act of Red State's really good. Mm-hmm. I remember going, oh, boy. Like, here we go, Kev. Here's a career resurgence.
Yeah.
And then the second act, I was like, And then the third act, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like it gradually started to fall apart for me as the movie went on.
Right.
Tusk is a mess.
Yeah, we do that. And there are people that like Tusk.
I laugh at it.
Yeah.
Like, I laugh at it.
Yeah.
And it's, like, there's moments that are kind of funny, but it's a mess.
Tusk sucks because it's kind of a fun idea, mm-hmm. too. It really is. Yeah. Speaking of fun ideas, Yoga Hosers. I heard about this. They were taking the two characters from Tusk, his daughter and
Depp's daughter.
Johnny Depp's daughter. And they were my favorite part of Tusk, honestly. I liked their scene or two in the convenience store. I thought they were kind of fun. I thought they brought some energy to a rather lifeless movie.
Sure.
And then Gila Point came in. Gila Point, Johnny Depp is also in this one. This movie is such a bummer. Like, it's for me, it's somewhat like I was just sitting there and, like, it gave me, maybe it's because we've been doing this. We've maybe getting a little more nostalgic on this podcast sometimes. We've been sitting back and looking at ourselves in the past. Like, I had flashbacks to sitting on the couch and watching stuff like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back and, like, Chasing Amy and Mallrats and be like, man, Kevin Smith, like, he's so sweet. Like he's just going to keep going and going and, like, doing all these cool things that, like,
I'm gonna be just like Kevin Smith.
Yeah, he's got it right. Like, he's going to keep growing as a filmmaker.
He's the voice of the nerd.
Yeah, he's the 90s nerdy Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of how he's pitched. And boy, this is such a bummer. I'm sitting there watching it, and I texted you during this. I'm like, we're 39 minutes into this movie, and we are not out of the first act yet. Like, nothing has happened. We've been introduced to the Bratzy character in it. And that wasn't the biggest problem with this movie is it's just not funny, and like that's an issue for a comedy. And I just can't. Maybe there are fans out there of it, like, because he's even said, like, I made this movie. He's like, I made this movie for, like, my daughter and teenage girls. And then, like, at the end, like, they're making Scent of a Woman jokes from Al Pacino. Like, teenage girls love that.
Yeah.
So I really think marijuana is the worst thing to happen to him.
It's not a good call for everybody to be doing that.
Yeah. What's funny is I still hold out. Like, I'll still see his movies because they're usually about an hour and a half long. And I still hold out hope because I still hold on to that, like, adoration mm-hmm. I had for him when I was younger. But this was a real downer.
Another Photoshop request from somebody out there. If you could Photoshop the Bratzy and Patrick Stewart hanging out together.
Yeah.
From Green Room. Please do.
Maybe he's eating the Bratzy.
Yeah, he's taking a bite out of the Bratzy.
There's a cool, it's called the Goalie Golem towards the end.
Whoa.
It's a big goal. It's kind of sweet looking.
Oh, cool.
But that's about it.
It's not a very good movie.
I want to run through some quick best moments of the year, movie-wise. the settling in montage in 10 Cloverfield Lane where they play I Think We're Alone Now.
So good.
It's so good. Because it's kind of unsettling and weird. And
it's
fun.
So good.
The Turkey Baster and Don't Breathe.
Woo!
Anybody who's seen it. Lainey from The Purge election year, she goes on a rampage at one point and cool. She blasts a furry. And a furry, if you're not familiar.
Oh, she kills a furry.
I think in my head, it's a furry. It's someone dressed in a rabbit suit.
Yeah.
And she blasts him on the shotgun.
Whoa.
The I Can't Help Falling in Love with You scene in Conjuring 2, I think is James Wan showing off that, like, hey, I'm really good with character now,
mm-hmm.
too. Black Phillip speaking in The Witch. Patrick Stewart's headshot in Green Room. In Neon Demon, that one kind of montage scene where Jesse L. Fanning goes through like a weird transformation and they're like all the triangles and she's looking in all the mirrors.
It's so weird.
It's so cool. Yeah. And then we didn't touch on Holidays much. Holidays is an anthology movie that takes place around mm-hmm. every holiday.
Yeah.
There's one or two good segments in it. The Father's Day segment, Seek Out. And then there's one, the reveal of the Easter Bunny. The Easter Bunny in Holidays is so fucking creepy.
Yeah.
It's like...
Is it scarier than the Easter Bunny in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
Because
that one freaked me out as a kid.
Yeah, this is weirder.
Okay.
Because it's an Easter Bunny mixed with, like, Jesus.
Whoa.
like a zombie Jesus. Right. So, if that's your thing, check it out. Really, anything you want to mention there?
No, I'm good. No, that's good. That's good.
Okay. All right. We're going to talk about The Conjuring, too. James Wan, The Conjuring.
Woo!
Let's pull up a real quick a plot summary.
Absolutely.
For Conjuring
2. What if the plot summary is just the sequel to The Conjuring?
Right. In 1977, paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren come out of a self-imposed sabbatical to travel to Enfield, a borough in North London. There they meet Peggy Hodgson, an overwhelmed single mother of four who tells the couple that something evil is in her home. Ed and Lorraine believe her story when the youngest daughter starts to show signs of demonic possession. As the Warrens try to help the besieged girl, they become the next targets of the malicious spirit. This was released in... This was a summer movie. Mm-hmm. Did pretty well, but I don't think it did as well as the first one.
No, I don't think it did.
Which is weird, but Willie, get us started here.
Well, I, for one, was very pleasantly surprised by the first Conjuring film, the first one. And... I had enjoyed the first Saw. I enjoyed pretty much all of James Wan's work up until this point. And I think this is James Wan going, he's dropping the mic.
Yep.
He's like, this is it. I will say I liked the overall, the story of the haunting in the first Conjuring more than I liked it in this one. Mm-hmm. This one was a little unfocused with that, to me, personally. But this one had, the best visuals, terrifying, creepy visuals that James Wan's ever pulled off.
Right.
And, it's the best James Wan ghost movie that James Wan's probably going to make. You know what I mean? I can't... How's he going to do better than this?
Yeah, I don't know.
We got the creepy nun, which is terrifying. One of my favorite characters of the year, for sure, is creepy nun. He does some cool stuff with the creepy nun. We've got... Like, old man ghost running around. He's creepy. We've got this spidery dude that runs around.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the visuals here are... Like, James Gunn, to me, has a visual style in the same way that Guillermo del Toro has a visual style. And I truly wholeheartedly mean that. James Wan does.
Yeah,
because if you... Like, if I see a ghost or a monster or a ventriloquist dummy, if I know it's from a James Wan movie when I see it. I'm like, that's James Wan. That's a James Wan creation. Because, mm-hmm. I don't know, he has this certain style about him when it comes to his ghost design and his creature design and stuff. And I dig that there's a consistent kind of, there's a consistency between his movies. The big thing I like about this movie is the relationship between Ed and Lorraine. Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga have really good chemistry and watching the two characters and kind of their relationship together and watching them grow individually and as a couple so far throughout this series. And it's a series I hope that continues. I think there's room for at least one more of these, for sure. As long as they maintain as long as they're able to draw on cases that are different enough from each other to not feel the same.
Yeah,
you know?
There are a ton of cool cases.
There are some cool ones,
I just
yeah.
read the book, I can't remember the name of the book.
The Demonologist?
Demonologist, thank you
yeah,
for the first time.
Nikki read that.
Yeah, and it's a blast.
yeah. It sounded like it was pretty cool. And they cover a lot of those cases in there. They had a case where they investigated a werewolf. I don't know if you know about this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could do a Conjuring 3 that could be about a werewolf.
Yeah. That'd be fun. A James Bond werewolf movie? Give me a break.
Awesome. Let's do it, James. Let's go. So, no, I like it. What's cool about this, too, is I think it does a cool... I mean, they set it up in the first movie, but this does a cool kind of... The Conjuring 2, the Conjuring series has its own format now.
Mm-hmm.
And not many film series have that. And what I mean by that is the Conjuring 2, or the Conjuring series, has its James Bond, like, shoot the gun, you know, like, opening sequence. Like, because we always start with another haunting, like another famous haunting. And like in the first like opening credit sequence, like 10 minutes, we have creepy. It gets you in the mood. It gets you in the vibe of things. This one, they do Amityville. You know, they cover Amityville a little bit. The first one was Annabelle. But they get you in that mindset and that mood and that creepy atmosphere. They suck you in and they scare the shit out of you. And then they blast you with this title screen. It's just really cool. And James Wan's awesome.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna say both of you. It's James Wan. This is him. Yeah, this is him showing off like right now because he's doing stuff in this movie. There's one point in this movie where he uses a Starsky and Hutch poster as a scare.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's creepy.
It's like somebody goes, James. Yeah. I found the least scary thing.
Yeah.
Make it scary. I dare you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's stuff in this. And what's weird about this movie and what's impressive about the movie is Ed and Lorraine Warren aren't in the movie much for the first half of it.
No.
They're kind of in the background. That's how confident he is in himself. It's really, the movie's kind of laid back and lax. At times it's like a hangout movie. Like people just hanging out. My favorite scene in the movie isn't even a horror. There's the part with the nun in the painting.
That's really good.
Oh God, it's so good. And then there's the part with the little girl with all the crosses.
That's really good too.
That's the thing is, these set pieces are fucking incredible. And like it's,
I don't want to have James Wan's dreams.
Right.
I'd rather not.
So, but my favorite part of this movie is the scene where Patrick Wilson gets his guitar out and plays Elvis for the kids because it's so incredibly sweet. And it's such a pause that a lot of times we don't get in big budget horror movies, especially where we get to hang out with the characters before something bad happens to them. And it's really effective and nice. And I was kind of blown away when it was happening.
And if there's another trend this year, that would also be it. Would be that we spend a lot of time with these characters before the things happen to them.
Yes.
Just all across the board.
Yes.
One thing I want to say about that real quick is that it's nice because it makes the Ed Warren character feel kind of important in the couple in terms of like their job. Because they always feel like equals, like in a partnership in a marriage.
Right.
But she certainly feels like the one who's more, dare I say, crucial to the actual act of paranormal psychology and all that. This time, I love that he's the one who's useful in the situation because all they really need in that moment is something to get them back down to like feel like normal people.
Yes.
And he's like, he knows exactly how to do it. It's so cool. Plus, he's like saying I love you to his wife.
Oh my God. It's this one. I think I love this movie too. And it grows more and more in my head because it's like the most romantic horror movie like of all time. Like it's at the Ed and Lorraine. I don't know too much about them in real life, but it's presented on screen. Like I know a lot about their cases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know a lot about them, but I've read about them. But it's presented on screen between these two actors is so sweet.
They're like the nicest.
They're so nice and they love each other. Vera Farmiga is awesome.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, she's awesome in everything.
And Patrick Wilson, man.
Patrick Wilson's killer, too. Yeah.
And he's, I don't know what it is with him and James Wan, man. It's a partnership that keeps on delivering. Keep making movies, fellas.
I think.
Well, he's going to be in Aquaman.
Is he?
Did you hear?
Who's he going to be, do you know?
He's going to be Ocean Master,
what?
The villain. I'm sorry. I know that's not horror related, but I had to throw it out there.
It's fine.
The partnership continues.
So just kind of sum up in comparison to Conjuring 1. Conjuring 1, I think, is maybe a more successful movie start to finish.
I would agree. Sure.
And I can see why maybe people weren't as hot. I think people liked this one quite a bit, but I can see why maybe it wasn't the phenomenon that the first one was. But the high points of this one are so high for me that I think I like it a little better.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would sit down and watch. It reminds me a little of Insidious, too, where Insidious 1 wasn't, I wasn't crazy about it, but I love Insidious 2. I think Insidious 2 is an awesome horror sequel.
Insidious 2 makes Insidious 1 a better movie.
It does.
Which is really weird.
One of the things, are you ready to jump into James Wan as a filmmaker? Did you
sure.
have anything
yeah,
else
yeah,
you want
yeah.
to
No. Let's talk about James
okay.
Wan. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to, when we think about the horror masters, we're going to try to put James Wan kind of in the canon of great horror directors of all time. I'm thinking people like Craven and Romero and Fulci, Cronenberg, Carpenter, Hitchcock, James Whale, Val Lewton, not a director, but Raimi. Did I say Raimi? I say Raimi twice because I'm
Sam Raimi.
Yeah. So Argento, people like that. And I want to know, do you think he's up there right now? Where do you think he falls?
Do I think he's up there?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. He's arguably. I'm not gonna start getting into like specifics, but he's arguably made more quality horror films than some of the people that you named.
Right.
I mean, obviously, it's all up to your own personal opinion and taste, and you know, by all means, you know, feel how you want to feel. But no, I think he's earned his right to be up there. Like if he had said right now, like, I'm done with horror, I'd be like, I don't blame you. Like, it's cool. You can walk away, dude. That being said, I hope he isn't. You know what I mean? I hope that he does kind of pull what he did with Fast six that he did?
He did seven.
Okay, with Fast and Furious 7, and then coming back to do Conjuring 2. I hope he continues to do that, because, of course, next he's got Aquaman, which is going to be this big, huge, giant budget superhero movie. I hope he's able to come back and maybe do like a Conjuring 3 or something else.
I don't want any more Conjuring movies that aren't directed by him.
Right?
Yeah, because I'm not crazy about the movies he's produced for the most part. I saw Lights Out this year. Mm. It's okay.
Yeah.
But, like, it's...
Sometimes the stamp doesn't mean a whole lot of anything. I'll be honest.
But they do have... Lights Out has a similar tone to what he does. And
it feels like
idea.
It fits alongside those, at least.
It does.
Okay.
But it's just... And that might hamstring it a little bit, honestly. Okay. Because the whole time you're like, well, what if James Wan was directing this?
Sure. So, no, I hope he keeps coming back to it, because... No, he's a master of the genre. He's officially become that. I mean, let's look at the filmography for a second. Mm-hmm. All right, we've got Saw.
Yeah,
Saw blew up.
Yeah,
Saw created a franchise that spans seven films. Seven.
Yeah,
they made as many Saw movies. They've made more Saw movies, like, per year than like Friday the 13th, than Nightmare on Elm Street. You know what I mean? Like, they've consistently been putting out Saw movies for.
Yes.
Like 7 years in a row. That's insane. He did Dead Silence.
He did Dead Silence.
Which...
Well, Dead Silence is fun.
I think he considers a stumble. From what I understand, I've heard Lee Winnell talk about it, and they kind of felt rushed into it, because they were like, it's kind of like okay, you made Saw, which blew up. You know what I mean? What do you got next?
Yeah.
And then they were kind of rushed into making another movie before they were ready. That being said... It's got its creepy factor. It's the weakest in his filmography, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a bad movie, mm-hmm. and a lot of people I know like love it.
I know.
Like, it's got a pretty passionate
fan. We do
know quite
a few people,
yeah.
a few people who love Dead Silence.
When I worked at a video store, we had a work meeting in the morning, and we were just like team building stuff. Oh, what's the scariest movie you've ever seen? Three out of like 10 people on the staff said Dead Silence. And I was like, what? Like, all right.
Of the creepy puppet movies, it's towards the top.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no Dolly Dearest, of course.
Right.
But anyway. So we've got Death Sentence, which is arguably a horror movie.
Death Sentence is so sweet.
It's awesome. It's really nasty.
Death Sentence, because I liked Saw. I wasn't crazy about Dead Silence
sure.
when I first saw it. But then I saw Dead Silence, or Death Sentence.
Death Sentence, yeah.
And I'm like, holy crap, like, James Wan is awesome. Because yeah. there's like a one-take shot of, like, in a parking garage that is, like, the most exhilarating thing I've ever seen. Like, it's so cool.
Dude, that movie's awesome.
Yeah.
And then what does he go into after that? It's,
Then he goes into, he goes into Insidious.
Yep. Which is a cool kind of haunting movie.
Yep.
It's sequel we talked about. It's better.
And then he does Conjuring. And then he does Insidious 2, yep. then Furious 7, then Conjuring 2.
Yeah, so. And I like Furious 7 as well.
Yeah, me too. Furious 7 is a miracle, and most of it's because of him.
Yep. So, James Wan, yes, he belongs up there.
I think, real quick, I think he definitely belongs in there. Mm-hmm. I put him more towards directors like Raimi, that maybe are a little bit more visual. I hesitate to put him up there with Craven and Carpenter and Romero, just because I don't think he's done anything yet with a lot of meat on it.
He hasn't done a lot of stuff, and who knows, we might see more of that as the years go by. We might go, oh, that's what
exactly.
he was saying.
Yeah, that's
that needs time, sometime, mm-hmm. some room to breathe. And then I think that it's hard to put him up there with those guys too, because quite frankly, those guys invented Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, James Wan has, I mean, he's kept, honestly, I think for the last five or six years, he's kept the horror genre, like, breathing in a lot of ways. And, like, big budget horror films.
Yeah, he's almost kept it breathing for maybe this year in particular, where people were ready to step up and help out.
Absolutely. And which is awesome, so thank you. You've done us all a service. But he hasn't ever quite made that iconic thing that changed the genre. You know what I mean? Whereas Romero invented the modern zombie. Mm-hmm. When does that? Lightning only strikes once on that.
Wes has two movies that...
We talked about it. Nightmare and Scream.
Yeah.
Carpenter is Carpenter.
Yeah, that's...
You know
that's
what
not
I mean?
Fair to anybody.
So, no, I don't... Yeah, and I don't think it would be fair to try. But I think he belongs in the same conversation. For sure.
I do too.
Yeah.
And that was not a slam because Sam Raimi's like my favorite director of all time.
Exactly.
So, and they have a very similar filmography in some ways, I think. And I think they're getting more similar as you make superhero movies and action movies.
I hope they're best friends in real life.
Right.
I just hope they are.
Lee Wan Allen, what's he up to? He's doing cool stuff.
I think he directed
what did he just
he directed Insidious 3, didn't he?
Yeah, and I liked Insidious 3.
Cool. I haven't seen it.
I liked Insidious 3. It was a fun movie.
Very cool.
So, you ready to move on?
Let's do it.
All right, Willie. I want to, real quick, we talked about movies. Big year for horror television.
Yes. Yes. Big year for horror TV.
TV's all over the place. I don't watch a ton of TV, but I do watch a few horror television shows.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. I was not a big year for TV for me, personally.
Okay.
So, you might be carrying this one for us.
Right. Let's start off though, because I know you and I have not watched like the big horror event,
the one that exploded.
2016. I watched the first episode, thought it was good. I just have not been able to get around to it while I watch every episode of Ash vs. Evil Dead. But Stranger Things, will you talk about Stranger Things?
Stranger Things, another one that, like I said, just like squeaked onto Netflix. Like it's here. There was no, I hadn't even heard about its existence. Like, that happens all the time with Netflix. I go on there and I'm like, another Netflix original show? The hell is this now? But this one came out and I was like, oh, that looks kind of cool. Like, it has like kind of a Drew Struzan-esque like old school movie poster, like as like the picture
and the font.
And the font is like Stephen King font, and I'm like, okay, this looks cool. So then I hit play and I went, oh boy, this is awesome. And what's weird is I had just so happened to be watching or reading it around that point, and this movie or this show takes a lot from Stephen King works and from It in particular. It's such a cool show. It really is. And I hope it's able to maintain. I worry about this show. I worry about
because
a sophomore season
so
for this. Yeah. Yep. I worry about that. But that being said, I've gotten old enough and wise enough, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn there, but I've gotten old enough and wise enough to realize that just because a show goes downhill doesn't mean I can't enjoy the stuff that came before it went downhill. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, but no, this is definitely a show that's worth watching. You do not have to be a horror fan to watch Stranger Things.
In fact, there are quite a few that aren't.
Most of the people I know that watch it are not typically horror fans. They're not opposed to watching a horror movie, but they're not like, you know, rabid or Die Hard or anything horror fans. It's got enough of everything in there to warrant. It's got some fantasy, it's got some drama and some romance and so on, and everything. It's a cool show, though. It's a cool show, and I'm definitely going to tune in for season two. I hope it's good. I hope that my fears are cast aside. We'll see, but no, definitely worth a watch. You'll have to.
I'll jump on the bed. Yeah,
it's tough because it's one of those shows that like if you don't happen to watch it before it blows up, sometimes I at least for me, I'm more hesitant to watch that stuff.
Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I know I'm going to watch Breaking Bad at some point and be like, this is the best thing ever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, why'd I never watch this? But it's going to be, it's probably going to be still a couple of years out before I do that.
Me too, yeah.
Because I need to be separated from the hype train. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because if I'm not part of the club, I'm like, okay, let me wait until this dies down so I can watch it on my own.
And you know this about me, too, is I suck at the Netflix model. I do not watch pretty much anything that's been released on Netflix. I still watch stuff week to week. I like to watch stuff live when it's on.
Yeah.
I think I'm old. Mostly.
I think you just need to find a way to...
To kind of treat it like a weekly.
You need to, like, say, okay, Wednesday nights I'm going to watch this show.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch one episode, and then I'm going to turn it off. Mm-hmm. I guess you could make your own model, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Make your own one. I like that. Yeah. Oh, that's a nice
one. Make your own kind of music.
Make your own special song.
Yep.
Cool. So that was Stranger Things, which I have not caught up on yet.
Sure.
One of the shows that I wish I would have caught up on, and you've watched all of it now, that I think ended this year, was Penny Dreadful.
I have not watched season 3.
You've not watched, so we won't even talk about it. I watched season 1. I started season 1, and it's sweet.
It's so fucking cool.
It's so cool.
I'm super bummed that that show's gone. Like,
I hear it ends really well.
That's so. That's why I'm like, okay, fine.
Yep.
I think I own all 3 seasons.
Do you?
So.
Yeah.
I just got to watch season 3. Yeah. It's on Netflix, too.
That's all on Netflix. I caught up, and I am. It just came out on DVD, actually. I think I just saw it in the video store when I walked down there. It was Bates Motel. Bates Motel. It has its good points and it has its bad. But Freddie Highmore and Vera Farmiga are so good in it. They carry the show, and it's really at times trashy fun.
Okay.
And it fits in the psycho canon. It's nice.
So on the Vera Farmiga scale.
Okay.
It's closer to Orphan than to The Conjuring.
Yeah.
In terms of quote classiness.
I think so.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
It's closer to Orphan and Running Scared.
Okay. Oh boy, I didn't like watching Vera in that one the last time I watched her. I like her classy, she's like a classy lady.
She is a classy lady.
Yeah.
She's not classy in Bates Motel.
She's
not classy.
She's not a classy lady.
Norma's not real classy.
She kind of puts on the air of it though, right?
Yeah.
Like her character's kind of like got like she's like always putting on a front for people, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's so good. She's so good. The show's fun. It's not one that I am like a hardcore fan of, but yeah. I like to watch it every once in a while.
And you'll see it through to the end.
I will see it through the end because I do like the characters. And Freddie Highmore is really underrated in the show.
Yeah.
People talk focus on Vera Farmiga, mm-hmm. and they should. She's great, but Freddie Highmore is really good.
Yeah. He's a good actor.
He's fantastic as Norman. Supernatural season 11. I watched this year. That happened this year. I've not started season 12 yet. It's so good. I don't understand it.
It doesn't make any sense. It defies all logic.
It's a show that takes a dip in season 6 and 7, I think, in quality, and then somehow picks back up into being like, hey, this is really good again. for what it is, I as a monster of the week, it's just it's kind of they call them laundry shows, I've heard it called, but yeah, like you do other things all the time, but man, when it hooks you, it hooks you. I'm still enjoying myself.
That's awesome.
And ready to watch it go 10 more seasons.
Watch it go 10 more seasons. Can you imagine?
They've pared it down. I mean, they focus on the good characters now.
They've got to be... realistically, though, and it's just a total side thing, how long do you think that show can keep going? I'm not trying to diss it. I'm just saying, like, realistically, how much longer can it go?
I don't know, because...
Those guys got to be getting tired of it, too, right?
I think they like having... steady work.
That's true.
I mean, bless their heart. They seem really... Jensen Ackles seems like the most comfortable man in his own skin.
Yeah,
like he's not even bummed he missed out on Captain America when she was up.
He's having a pretty good time.
He's fine.
Yeah. They do have a rabid fan base.
They do. I think they have a rabid fan base. They always seem like they're having fun at Comic-Cons. They seem to all get along with each other.
That's true. I guess why say... Yeah.
I kind of... Just for... says I would like to see it end at season 13 just because it's a cool spot to end that
can
show.
We have him fight Jason though.
Do you remember they're gonna do that?
Yeah.
What was the other thing they're gonna do?
It was like a cross promotion thing because Jared Padalecki was in the remake.
Yeah.
And then they were gonna have the Winchester Bros fight Jason, and I was like, that's awesome.
So they had a
Can you imagine them rolling up in the car they see the Camp Crystal Lake sign? You'd lose your mind.
There was just an interview out. And this sounded like it could have been the coolest episode they ever did. But they were going to do a Smallville crossover.
What?
And they were going to... It was kind of a Smallville crossover.
Oh, you mentioned this to me.
But the boys were going to investigate the Superman curse, where every actor that plays Superman has died. And they go and they meet Tom Welling, and they have to protect Tom Welling.
This sounds so
sweet.
Like,
they couldn't work out the logistics or whatever, but it ended up the way the Friday the 13th one did.
That sounds so cool.
God, it's funny.
Yeah.
Scream season 2 I have not watched.
I have finished it.
Yeah.
It's a delight.
Season 1 was so much fun. I'm going to crank that out next, I think.
You know what? The Halloween special might be the best part of season 2.
See, there's a listener, he's a Fear.com fan, so that throws his taste into question right away, who hated the Halloween special.
I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun because it's like a one-off.
Yeah.
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 Like, I won't say too much about it, but yeah, it's like it starts and it's done by the end. Like, there's no mystery left.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It Scream's a blast.
And they do a setup for season 3.
Good.
Yeah.
Scream's a blast. to just two more real quick. Exorcist is on the air now. Watch it on demand. Do whatever you can. It's awesome.
Save it.
Save it.
I still haven't watched it. I don't have TV.
Yeah. give it. If Fox is smart, they'll do the thing where they release it right away on a streaming service.
Well, they do all their shows on Netflix, I think, because Gotham's on Netflix.
Okay. Like, then they instantly need to get it out there right away.
Please do, because I want to watch it. Like, as soon as it goes on, I'm gonna eat it up. But
this is for Exorcist 1 and 3 fans.
Which I am.
Yep. So this is in the vein of that. It's so cool. And awesome. Then Ash vs. Evil Dead, Season 2. I liked Season 1. Season 2 is, for the most part, awesome. They did some things in this season that were hysterical and gross and gory. At one point, they basically do Evil Dead mixed with Christine with Ash's car.
That's so cool.
And they get to the last episode, and there's an interview online with The Onion with the creator, because the creator's leaving for creative differences with Rob Tapper. Go read the interview, because it's fascinating, because the finale, it's not bad. It's actually a lot of fun, but there's something off about the last, like, 10 minutes.
Okay.
And in the interview, you realize why. Because there seems to be some clashing about what kind of tone the show wants. And it's so weird. Evil Dead is weird because there are two distinct tones, and he picked the one that I think might work better at this point in the franchise's life.
Okay.
The creator did. And Rob Tapper wants something like they did with the remake. And I'm not necessarily sure that works with Ash right now.
Okay.
So
that sounds like, it sounds like that's a definitely, I don't want to say a war between two creative forces, but it seems like it's certainly a disagreement between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Raimi's doesn't seem to be as involved as he was in season one early, at least.
What's Raimi up to right now?
I don't know. He was doing this World War III movie.
Okay.
But now the actual World War III seems like it'll probably happen, so who needs a movie? so that was a rough joke. So he's going to be producing The Last of Us, Don't Breathe 2. He's attached to a lot of producer things.
Okay.
I think Sam seems to just like attaches. Okay, World War III announced The Black. Oh, it's a short. The Black Gandola is a short.
Huh.
So World War III had an awesome idea.
Interesting.
It's based on a book, and it was a really cool idea. But it, with Raimi, you never know, because he seems to really like just sitting around making money producing things.
Yeah, hey, and you know what? Go nuts.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to judge him.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was TV this year.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. We're running. We're running a log here.
All right.
So we'll move in real quick.
We invite you
to the invitation.
Yes.
The Invitation was one of my favorite movies this year. While attending a dinner party at his former home, a man thinks his ex-wife and her new husband have sinister intentions for their guests. They do.
Mm-hmm.
We saw this movie. Did we review it for our other podcast?
We did not. This is the one of the three that we have not talked about.
Okay.
Because I believe we reviewed Conjuring 2 and Green Room.
Okay, I didn't review Conjuring 2, I don't think so. That's
okay.
Nice. But we watched this. I think we talked about it a little bit. This is one of my favorite movies of the year.
For sure.
Period.
Yep.
Directed by Karen Kusama, who I like quite a bit. She did the incredibly underrated, in my opinion, Jennifer's Body a couple years ago.
Agreed.
Yep. So, Willie, what did you think of The Invitation?
I liked it a lot. This is a horror film for adults, for grown-ass adults.
Yep.
which I'm gradually becoming, finally. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
like every few months that goes by, I go, okay, that's another like layer to the adulthood. you know what I mean? So it's funny because I start to relate more to that stuff. And I find myself, this one really preys on, I think, a lot of adult fears. You know,
yeah. Dinner parties.
Dinner parties, hanging out with people that you really don't want to be around that much.
Yeah, you're not a fan of gatherings.
Me?
Yeah. You don't like other people.
No.
Being around them.
Yeah.
It's because we've talked about it. You know, like going to movies a lot of the time.
Yeah, I don't like being around like strangers.
No, I agree.
And I don't like awkward like catching up with people that I really didn't talk to.
I haven't seen in a while.
And that's what this is.
We were just at a very fun dinner party.
Well, yeah, because I like all those people.
Like all these people. And I know all those people. There's no pretension to these people.
No.
The dinner party, like the invitation, seems horrible, like just dreadful.
Well, I mean, let's add the fact that that this is like a couple of exes who are going to dinner together.
Grieving exes.
Grieving, yeah. It's not a good situation. It's basically everything that you'd be afraid of as an adult in one movie.
And then John Carroll Lynch shows up.
And then it's everything and more that you're afraid of as an adult. Yeah, John Carroll Lynch, like you know, like, I love John Carroll Lynch. He's awesome.
Yeah.
But good God. There is no one that can instantly make me uneasy more than John Carroll Lynch. Like, Jackie Earle Haley makes me less uneasy than John Carroll Lynch.
Can you imagine if they team those two up?
I would be too much. Everybody would walk out of the theater because they'd be too nervous. And he is literally he's like a ticking time bomb in this movie. Like, you know that when he shows up, you know things are going to get bad. Mm-hmm. And then they do. get very bad.
And because of him.
Because of him. Yeah. It really is. This movie's something else. It's unlike any horror movie I've seen ever. And that's a rarity. It gets under your skin. It is a slow burn. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a while to kind of get where it's going. But your sense of unease and dread and tension, all those horrible feelings that you live for when you watch this kind of movie, they're all there right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Even though there's not a lot going on, or seemingly not a lot going on right out of the gate, I'd say in the first half hour or so, it doesn't matter. You know, like, it's a gradual build. Mm-hmm. And then when all hell breaks loose, like, it's, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it keeps peeling back the layers, and it does so.
And you start to question what, you start to question, is there something going on? Am I watching that kind of horror movie? Mm-hmm. You know, with external forces at play? Or am I watching a horror movie with internal forces at play?
Right.
What am I watching? Because you start, as the lead, Logan Marshall Green, who is very good in this, and he's an actor that I feel like I might have kind of poo-pooed at some point, and I feel bad about that now. Because I feel like he's kind of been in a lot of stuff where he's been underused, and he hasn't really had any chance to show much of his range. You know what I mean? He kills it in this one, so...
He's in Prometheus, isn't he?
Right, yeah.
He's in Devil.
He hasn't exactly had a ton to work with, so I liked him a lot in this. I dug the movie beginning to end, and I think everybody should check it out. I think this is another horror movie where you don't have to be a horror fan to check it out.
Me too.
Necessarily.
And that's part of the reason I picked it, is because, or part of the reason I wanted to talk about it, because it's really the first hour and 20 minutes of this movie could be a stage play. Like, and I think that you don't see a lot of horror movies like that.
Mm-mm.
And
it's classy, man.
It really is. It looks gorgeous. It's a beautifully shot Los Angeles movie too. Yeah. This is a great Los Angeles movie.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's got kind of those David Lynch style shots in it. Karen Kusama is a really good director.
Super talented.
I hope she gets something else. Really cool. But yeah, that's the thing, is it all plays on these human emotions.
Fears. Fears of like loss of a relationship at that point in your life. Because I think there's an added, I think as you get older, you start to realize that your clock is ticking. Yeah. And I don't mean to get like down here, but it's just the truth. Like, the older you get, the more you realize, all right, I've only got, odds are I've got about this much left.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the truth of it. And so when something traumatic happens, like the loss of a child or the loss of a relationship, a divorce, your thoughts are going to be, my chances of being able to do that again are much lower than they were. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's scary. That's scarier than most stuff you find in horror movies.
Yeah. And there, what's so amazing about this movie is there are a few different ways you can react. And I would never tell anybody how to grieve over the loss of a child.
No,
because it's
no.
Horrible thing you hope never happens anyway.
No.
But there are ways to react about it. And I'm not sure either one of the main characters of the movie reacts particularly well. And
I think they're both unhealthy reactions.
And one of them is more unhealthy than the other. And the third act kind of proves that. I don't quite like the third act as much as like the first two acts. I kind of like the talkiness of it.
The thing is, a movie like this, it's going to reach a point where it's got to reach its logical breaking point.
Uh-huh.
And you're either going to love it, or you're gonna go, okay, it's acceptable, or you're going to hate it. And this is, okay, it's acceptable.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, okay, all right, that's fine.
But but it it makes the point that you know, you handle things, and they even say it in there. You handle things your own way, and grief is a very personal thing, and a lot of things are very personal things. But when you start dragging other people along with you, that's when it becomes an issue.
It's a problem.
And that's something that I think is very, very interesting in 2016, especially the cult aspect of it. A lot of the kind of telling yourself what you want to believe rather than accepting reality. Yep. That's something we've seen quite a bit because we're
forming your own version of what reality actually is. Yeah.
Because we live in an age where you get all everything, like you have all of the information in the world. And what you can essentially do is you can just build your own belief system.
You can pick and choose.
Yeah, you don't have to deal with harsh reality.
You can look at your Facebook feed and just use that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wanted to talk about it real quick. 2016, great year for just made-up news.
Yeah.
Huge year for made-up news. Facebook, mainly. Facebook and Google searches, and a lot of these things were... Did you know, Willie, that this gentleman who creates a lot of these fake news that you see, like Trump supporters kill everybody in the world at the rally, hang people over the rally. Yeah. Hillary is running a sex ring out of her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These people make $30,000 a year doing this.
It's insane, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. This must be nice.
Yeah, to just make stuff up.
So much of this stuff is like driven by money. Yeah, I mean, the reinforced Google searches, you can advertise on Google. You can pay to have your stuff at the top of a Google search.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was the year that, BuzzFeed... came out with a story that said that shares, reactions, and comments on a lot of these fake news stories got more likes. Well, yeah, like shares than New York Times, Washington Post, and CNN, for example. Now, part of that is those places not doing their jobs correctly because print media has done it. And 24 Hour News Network are terrible too.
Yes,
they have not done a good job in the recent years.
I honestly
informing
like
people.
I honestly liken it to the. To the film industry when the pirating was first happening, like they were warned by the music industry, like it's coming for you next.
Yeah.
Like look at what's happening to us, and they didn't react or do anything to adapt to it.
Yes,
they didn't, and they're still suffering for it.
Yeah.
And I think that's similar to what like mainstream media is doing. Like you guys didn't catch up quick enough.
No,
you screwed up, and now people are getting their news from BuzzFeed.
Yeah, BuzzFeed or, random shit they find on the internet. And some people, we work with, she's not listening. So, but I work with a woman, and she, like, one day she just goes, Germany, like, we're on DEFCON 5 because Germany, like, we're in a nuclear crisis. And, like, my only reaction is, like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, what are we even talking
like,
about?
I don't even know how to, like, say to you, like, what? No, like that's impossible.
That's incorrect.
That's literally impossible. But I know for a fact, and I feel bad for her because I don't think she knows any better, but that was something she read on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because, and one of the things this movie touches upon is we believe our close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is now we can see everything our friends say on the internet. And if you believe them and someone posts Germany has got us in DEFCON 5, you go, holy crap, this is like Billy saying this.
Like, Billy is a trustworthy guy.
Billy, I like Billy. Like, he's saying this.
Billy was at my son's bris. Like, he's got to be a stand-up guy, right?
Yeah. What I was confused about is why she came to work.
Yeah. If she thought the bombs were going to drop, why was she at work? Yeah, that's a good question.
But
that's the biggest bummer, I think, there.
But I kind of felt for her right away. But so this movie kind of touches on that. But a lot of it is to people seek out that kind of stuff, too, I think, to kind of... reinforces what they already believe and what they want to believe. And I think that's what this movie is about a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is a relevant movie in 2016, unfortunately, much like Green Room. But hey, that's what horror movies are for, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
So real quick, I want to go back to the glory days of fake news real quick. You remember Weekly World News?
I do.
I want to read
off. Bat Boy.
This is good fake news.
Yeah, it's
not
fun stuff.
Garbage we're confronted with today.
That's fun stuff.
I want to read off President Bush advised by a mouse.
Ooh, I like that.
Babies found living on board Titanic.
Okay.
This is the best.
That's really confusing.
This is my favorite one because of the picture. Duck hunters shoot angel, and there is an angel, like an actual, like a heavenly angel lying face down in the water. And it says, like, there's a quote from an Alabama man that says, "She looked like a giant bird."
That's really good.
Tabby Tabby rules retirement roost. Fat cat owns 23 old ladies. Parent vanishes during peekaboo games.
That's actually kind of scary.
9-month-old baby gets black belt in karate.
Oh, what a badass.
Kitten guilty of murder. Sign the petition inside or Fluffy dies.
Wow.
Now, this one I wanted to bring up, too, because there was a show on USA Network about Weekly World News.
Uh-huh.
And they did a reenactment of this. It was Dead Hubby's Ghost Haunts Toilet, swears Texas Widow. And this ghost head comes up through the toilet. And it's like a green floating ghost head.
Oh, my God.
And I believe it's exact words were, woo!
Ooh.
And like the woman runs out of the room screaming.
Spooky.
So, yeah.
That's good stuff.
I wanted to bring that up real quick because I wanted to remind people that, hey, fake news isn't all bad.
No. Sometimes it can be fun.
Yeah.
Or it used to be. So.
Yes.
That's beautiful. I love it.
All right, Willie. That was 2016.
Yep.
Did you like it? Did you like the year?
I liked it for horror movies.
I think it was a great year.
I think we can leave it at that.
I think it was a great year for horror movies.
Absolutely. Very impressive.
One of the best of
all. I still have a lot I have to catch up on, so I'm excited for that, too.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I one thing I want to, before we sign off tonight, I do want to say a big shout out to a couple of other podcasts.
Cool.
I meant to do this in feedback and I didn't get a chance. I forgot, rather. So big shout outs to the Obsessive Viewer podcast. They've been friends of ours, online friends of ours for a while now. Always always active on Twitter, and you can find them at ovpodcast.com.
Yes.
Super, super cool people. Also, a friend of ours, Sandy, has a podcast called Films of Every Color, mm-hmm. and that's color as in C-O-L-O-U-R.
Yes.
Okay. Find them at filmsofeverycolor.com. Very cool show. If you guys are looking for something interesting to listen to, either one of these are great options, and these guys have always been kind to us, and we want to show them a little kindness in return. So thank you guys very much. Be sure to check those fellows out. And then, of course, as always, a big thanks to John Morrell for our music.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's a gentleman and a scholar.
He is. Great guy.
Absolutely.
We saw Rogue One with him.
Yep. Oh, I guess I might as well touch on feedback, where you can shoot us feedback, right?
Yeah, let's tell the people.
Facebook. Facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook. Twitter. Mm-hmm. @ HM Yearbook. Mm-hmm. We have a website. Mm-hmm. You can't reach us there, but you can check it out.
I think you can leave comments there.
You can probably leave comments. There's probably less spam comments on there.
Right.
That's horrormovieyearbook.com. And then, of course, you can shoot us email. We have an email at gmail.com. It's horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. So please shoot us some feedback. We love to hear from you. We just might use your ideas at some point on the show. We've done it before, and we'll do it again.
Yeah.
Speaking of using people's ideas.
Yes.
I promised, without talking to you, we tend to swap. So you'll pick a year, I'll pick a year, you'll pick a year, I'll pick a year. So I'm picking this next episode, I'm picking the year that we're going to do.
Okay.
And because I'm a wonderful and dutiful husband, mm-hmm. I am allowing my wife to choose the year. So I'm calling her right now. She's going to be on speakerphone.
This is exciting stuff, folks.
Are you excited, aren't you?
Yeah,
you look really excited.
This is live radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're going to see. Hopefully she answers. I've told her to prepare.
We've called your family on a podcast before. We called your father.
My dad. He talked about The Mummy.
He did?
Yeah, with Brendan Fraser.
He did.
Yeah.
We should know.
He's a fan.
Put that out.
Hello. Hi, you're on Horror Movie Yearbook.
Oh, my gosh.
So I let the listeners know that I decided that the greatest Christmas present I could give you was the opportunity to choose. Was the opportunity?
She said she wanted to open a gift.
Yeah, you're getting an early gift right now.
Can I use it for a treadmill?
Oh wow! Okay, all right. Truth comes out. all right. Enough of that madness. There's no horror movies about treadmills, by the way. Somebody should do one of those.
Ooh,
that'd be good stuff.
Tread kill.
Oh, I like that.
Deadmill.
Like, what about like a haunted gym? Like an Anytime Fitness that's haunted at night?
Oh, my gosh.
During the witching hour? And the equipment kills people? Okay, anyway. So I digress. Nikki, did you select a year?
Yes, I did.
What year did you select?
1971.
Oh, boy.
And Nikki, what are some of the films that obviously we're not going to announce our films just yet, but what are some of the options we have available to us?
I really just picked it.
What film would that be?
The Nightcomers.
What is it?
It's called The Nightcomers.
The Nightcomers.
Starring Marlon Brando.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see if we can find a copy of that one. Well, there you have it.
This is an interesting year. This is a good year.
Okay.
And there's, that was the other one that I wrote down, but I was looking at some other ones. I can't remember the name of the movie.
Like, something about killing Sarah.
Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Is this
okay.
Year, which I would like to That's check good. Out.
What's that?
We're just talking about movies, yeah.
The original Willard.
Well, thank you.
You are very welcome.
All right. You have a wonderful rest of your evening. I will see you when I'm done here.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. There you have it.
Yeah.
Official wife of Horror Movie Yearbook.
Says
1971 and apparently wants us to...
talk about the Nightcomers.
The Nightcomers. Well, you just not sound like a good option. When you hear the title alone.
I'm so happy this happened.
Are you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, first of all, this is an interesting year.
Yeah. What else do we got? What are other options?
I'll run through. The Abominable Dr. Fibes.
Oh, okay.
Daughters of Darkness. Let's Scare Jessica to Death, which I would like to.
Yes, I want to do that one. Yep.
Countess Dracula. The House That Dripped Blood. Willard. Lust for a Vampire. Bay of Blood.
Bay of Blood's Bava, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cat of Nine Tails. There was something else here. Night of Dark Shadows, which I believe is in the Dark Shadows. Oh, Vampiros Lesbos.
Ooh.
Man, can you imagine? The Return of Count Yorga. I think we will stick to the first couple that I named off, because there's some interesting stuff.
Cool.
There.
Awesome.
Yeah.
71 it is.
Yeah.
All right.
1971,
well.
We were not even close.
No. This will mark the furthest that we will travel back in time.
Yeah.
So I sure hope the time machine is up and running by the time we...
We might, if we can get it kicking, we might at some point in our lives go way back.
Way back.
But this, I think it's going to be down the road.
We got to be careful how far back we travel. We don't know how much of ourselves we're leaving behind.
Right.
So...
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, no, thank you guys so much for listening.
Yes.
It's been a joy.
Hey, yeah. Have a good New Year.
Absolutely. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. Yep. Whatever you celebrate, celebrate it with family and friends and love and laughter. And watch a horror movie.
Yeah.
There's plenty of holiday horror movies out there.
There are. I should watch one.
Yeah. Watch a Christmas classic, but then also squeeze a horror movie in there too. Or just go with like a Gremlins, which is a nice blend.
Yeah. Nice compromise.
Absolutely.
Does not want to watch it. But hey.
Yep.
See you later.
Absolutely.